Chapter 11. The Stargazer. It was hard to believe it was only slightly after 7 in the morning. So much had happened already, it felt as though I should be eating dinner, not breakfast. Daisy Creek had put together yet another amazing spread, with platters full of bacon, sausage, scrambled eggs, and homemade cinnamon rolls. We had to eat inside, in the dining room, because all the patio furniture had been destroyed by the stampede. The search party wasn't back from tracking Sasquatch yet, but everyone else eagerly piled their plates high and gathered around the table. The dining room table was a great, long slab of wood, hewn from a redwood tree. Of course, an elk horn chandelier hung above it. Heidi sat beside J.J. McCracken, giving him an earful.
"It's not bad enough that we had a bear in the house. Now you had to spook all my bison and cause a stampede? I'll be lucky to have any furniture left by the end of the week."
"I'm sorry," J.J. told her, and he seemed to really mean it. He was obviously greatly embarrassed by the trouble he had caused. "I was only trying to find Sasquatch."
"Sid, Evan, and the others are taking care of that. I thought it'd help to have some eyes in the air."
J.J. and Karina had rented the helicopter at the Yellowstone Airport from a company that normally used it for giving aerial tours. Wary of starting another stampede, they had left the aircraft parked in the field near the house. Karina was also embarrassed. She hadn't said much, besides apologizing profusely. Meanwhile, I sat next to Pete and Ray, wanting to question them about the night before. Ray was the only person I hadn't seen during the incident with Sasquatch, and he claimed to have slept through everything. Although I was having trouble getting a word in, Ray couldn't stop talking.
"I can't believe you got to ride in front of a stampede," he exclaimed. "That must have been the rush of a lifetime. I mean, I ran with the bulls in Pamplona once, but this sounds way more exciting. In Pamplona, there's only 6 bulls. You had like 1,000 bison chasing you. How'd you feel?"
"Terrified," I said. "But also exhilarated, right?"
No. Really, just terrified."
"You're a lucky kid," Ray told me. "Do you know how few people on Earth have seen a bison stampede from so close by? Less than 12, I'll bet. And you got to see a grizzly bear this morning. That must have been amazing."
"That was also really scary," I reminded him.
"I can't believe I slept right through it," Ray said, sounding disappointed. He turned to Pete. "Why didn't you wake me up?"
"That was one of the most horrible experiences of my life," Pete exclaimed. "You were lucky to sleep through it."
"Lucky to miss an up-close encounter with a grizzly?" Ray asked doubtfully. "You know how much I love wildlife."
"You wouldn't have liked this, trust me."
Pete sneezed into a monogrammed handkerchief. His allergies had him stuffed up like a clogged drain. He had made an attempt to dress casually, donning shorts and a polo shirt for the day, although both had been freshly ironed. I took advantage of the break in the conversation to finally ask Ray a question.
"You didn't hear a single thing last night? Even though your room was right across the hall from the one with the bear?"
"Ray sleeps like a rock."
Pete blew his nose wetly into the handkerchief.
"He can sleep through anything. Once we were on a plane to Paris that experienced the worst turbulence I've ever been through in my life. All around us, everyone was vomiting and screaming, and this guy was out cold the entire time."
Ray shrugged.
"It's a gift."
"Although he's not great at going to sleep," Pete added. "It takes him hours sometimes, but once he's out, he's out."
"Hours?" I repeated.
"I'm really a night owl," Ray said. "It's usually hard for me to get to bed before 1 or 2 in the morning."
"Was that the case last night?"
"Definitely," Pete said. "He was restless as could be."
He looked to Ray. "What time did you ultimately turn in?"
"It wasn't until around 2, Ray admitted,
which meant that Ray had been up long after Pete and everyone else had gone to bed. In theory, he could have stolen the necklace before Sasquatch showed up, although I still had no idea how he would have gotten in and out of the locked bedroom.
"So what did you do until then?" I asked.
"I read, mostly," Ray said, "although I also went outside for a bit. I've never seen so many stars in my life. It was incredible."
He launched into a whole discourse about what he'd seen. The Milky Way, Venus, Mars, and a dozen meteors. I started to point out that the stars at home were equally as amazing, but then caught myself. My parents and I lived on the edge of the wilderness behind Fun Jungle, which was far from the closest city, whereas Ray and Pete lived in Austin, which was well over an hour away. Pete griped about the length of his commute all the time, but then he would have loathed living in the trailer park. Instead, I was struck by a thought. I waited until Ray finally took a breath in his story, then said, "Which door did you go out through?" Ray looked at me curiously.
"Why do you ask?"
"Sasquatch came in through the front door last night," I explained. "It was wide open. I was trying to figure out how that happened."
A worried look crossed Ray's face. "I did go out through that door. I went to the front yard to look at the stars. I remember noting that it wasn't locked, because we would never leave our door unlocked in the city. But I'm sure I shut it when I came back inside. At least, I think I did."
"You must have," Pete said supportively. "You're not the kind of person who would leave a door wide open in the middle of the night."
"I certainly wouldn't have forgotten to shut it."
Ray nervously poked at his eggs with his fork.
"But what if I didn't close it all the way? Then it'd be my fault that the bear got in here."
Pete put a calming hand on Ray's arm.
"That bear was coming in no matter what."
He turned to me and spoke in the self-assured voice he used for all public relations events.
"Ray was in no way responsible for that bear's intrusion into this house. Yes, he went out to see the stars, but he is a responsible adult and he was sound asleep throughout the entire time the bear was indoors."
I asked Ray, "After you looked at the stars, you went right to bed?"
"Yes. The next thing I knew, Pete was waking me up, hysterical, and telling me that a bear had been inside."
Pete sneezed into his hanky again.
"I wasn't hysterical."
"You were awfully close."
I considered pressing Ray further to see if he could remember whether he had fully closed the front door or not, but before I could, the hunting party returned. Sydney, Evan, Melissa, Zach, and Gavin came in through the kitchen door, as it was the closest entrance to the stables, looking tired, dusty, and frustrated.
"No luck?" Heidi asked, reading their mood.
"Not enough."
Sydney sagged into a chair, then looked to JJ apologetically.
"Sorry, we gave it our all, but the trail went cold."
JJ didn't bother trying to hide his frustration. He dropped his fork onto his plate with a loud crack.
"So you're just giving up?"
"What do you expect me to do?" Sydney asked. "I'm not a wizard. I can't wave a magic wand and make the bear appear."
"You had dogs, though. Couldn't they follow his scent?"
"They're herding dogs, not hunters. They got confused. Sasquatch has been going back and forth through those woods by the river for weeks. His scent is everywhere. The dogs ended up running in circles."
"Then why didn't you bring some real hunting dogs?"
"This is what I've got. What was I supposed to do, run into town and get some hunting dogs at 5 in the morning?
"Yes. And what happened with your son? I thought you said he was the best tracker around."
"He is, but he can't work miracles. A bear doesn't get to be as big as Sasquatch without learning to shake a hunting party."
JJ angrily smacked his hand on the table.
"So what are you saying here, Sydney? That the bear's smarter than you are? If I'd known you were going to quit so easily, I would have stayed up in the helicopter."
"So you could start another stampede?" Sydney asked tartly. "We're lucky someone didn't get hurt thanks to that stunt, and all my patio furniture's ruined."
"Patio furniture?" JJ repeated. "You're upset because you lost a few chaise lounges? That stupid bear of yours may have eaten a necklace that's worth more than this entire ranch."
A silence fell over the table.
The argument had already grabbed everyone's attention, but now the whole room seemed shocked by JJ's statement.
"Exactly how much is that necklace worth?" Melissa asked.
JJ was obviously upset at himself for letting that slip.
"Plenty," he said.
"What's plenty?" Heidi pressed. "Thousands of dollars? Hundreds of thousands?"
"Plenty," JJ replied in a brusque tone that indicated he wasn't going to say any more.
Another silence followed that, as everyone tried to guess what plenty meant to a man like JJ McCracken. Finally, Evan spoke.
"I think Sasquatch might be in the mine."
Everyone turned to him at once.
"What mine?"
JJ asked, intrigued.
"There's an abandoned gold mine on the property," Sydney replied, "but there's no way Sasquatch is in there."
"His paw prints were around the entrance," Evan said.
"Hold on now," JJ said. "Are you telling me you tracked the bear to this mine, but then didn't go in after him?"
"That mine is a death trap," Sydney said. "We boarded it up years ago, but it looks like some of the wood planks rotted away. Going in there would be meshuggah."
"What's that mean?" Summer asked.
"Crazy,"
Melissa translated.
"And there's no point anyhow," Sydney said. "Bears don't go into old mines."
"They're not supposed to go into houses either," JJ reminded him, "or eat jewelry, but this one did."
He looked to the table.
"We are running out of time to find that bear before he poops out my necklace. If it's that dangerous to go into the mine, I'm willing to pay whoever's willing to risk it for their troubles."
Zack and Aaron turned to him, suddenly intrigued.
"I'll go," Zack said without a moment's hesitation.
"Me too,"
Aaron volunteered.
"And me,"
Evan shouted excitedly.
"No," Sydney told him firmly. "I don't want you going into that mine. It's way too dangerous."
"But they can go?"
Evan asked, pointing to Zack and Aaron.
"They're adults," Heidi said. "They can make their own decisions."
"No matter how thoughtless," Sydney added under his breath.
Evan shoved his breakfast plate away angrily.
"This sucks. You're always telling me I need to get outside more, and now, when I finally want to do something, you tell me I can't do it."
"We don't want you to end up in danger," Heidi said.
Evan glowered sullenly.
"I never get to do anything exciting."
Everyone else resumed their conversations, filling the room with noise again. While they were all occupied, I turned to Evan and said,
"If you want excitement, I could use some help."
Evan looked at me warily.
"Doing what?"
"Solving a mystery."